What's up, everybody? We're here for Mudball Monday.
I'd probably go 6-4 steak.
At Yeaman's Hall, I believe. I feel like I've got a couple pictures on my camera of you sitting there with a lone 8% or walking down the 17.
It is what it is.
Just getting the walk in, my wife is fortunately pretty supportive of this newfound addiction.
What was it about National, be it the golf course, the company, the whole experience of playing out on Long Island?
Pause.
Burrito Bowl. Where is this coming from? Don't do it to me, DC.
You know, sometimes I will have a little Chipotle.
Good morning, Thai people, young and old. It is episode 110. Let's take attendance real quick. I am Walker and I'm in attendance. My partner Henry is here.
I'm here.
And we've also got Charleston's David Patrick Conway here. David, thanks for David DC for this pod. Thank you for being here. Excited to chat.
Thanks for having me. A pleasure to be on the pod, guys.
Yeah, excited to do this. We've DC has been a long time internet friend and consistently back and forth in the DMs between Henry and myself, so just really excited to get some dirt in. And I guess if we make it to Mudball Monday, we make it to Mudball Monday. It is what it is. Henry's going to start us off today. We've got three for dirt, so we'll try and keep it brief. But today we're going to talk about how to curate the kind of golf that you want to play. We're going to talk architecture. This is a certifiable culture pod. Architecture, kind of the company that we play with, and then the proximity to the golf course. And then, I don't know, we'll probably get into a little bit of wine talk here. DC is a big wine guy. Henry and I are both just total newbies. And we got to know what we need to pick up on the way to a dinner party. So we may get into that too. Henry, hit us with the dirt.
The dirt, here we go. Coming in hot last night from LA. So it's going to be California-centric, starting with the drinking. Had to stop in a couple times to Mr. Phil's Coffee for a couple cups. Picked up some beans. You know, it's always important to be doing your R&D. And so got back this morning and like a little nerd, I had a little A-B testing going. My Phil's beans, had my Good Walk testing them one-to-one. And as per usual, Good Walk holds up. So if you all want to test it out yourself, code the tie, THETIE at goodwalkcoffee.com. Save on anything on the site. Highly recommend it. That's the D. Rolling straight into the E. I feel like this was like true Thanksgiving practice. Restaurant that I've wanted to go to in West Hollywood for years, called Night Plus Market, a Thai restaurant. There are a few of them across LA. And it was a true just like, you know, order six or seven things. There were three of us there. And, you know, Thai is one of those things. I don't eat Thai food all that often. It's not because I don't love it, but it's just because when I do exactly what I did, which is eat just entirely too much. And so I mean, I was full, like to the brim for a good 3 hours or 4 hours after that. So again, just trying things out for Thanksgiving and kind of testing my stomach to prepare for what's only, 11 days away now. So a lot to be excited for there. Rolling into my reading, picked up a book at a coffee shop yesterday in Santa Barbara, just at like a little free library situation. Backroads to March by John Feinstein. Big fan of John Feinstein. He's great sports writer, golf, basketball, all the things. And apropos to the time of year, you know, getting into college basketball and excited to already be looking forward to what we've got with March. So I'll probably try to bleed that one out pretty slowly, you know, just as the season rolls along, 10 pages here, 10 pages there. It'll be a nice way to, you know, get myself back into college basketball. Finally, my thinking, two quick things, very random, very unimportant. Shout out to Camilo Villegas leading right now in Bermuda. That would be pretty awesome to see. Been out of the scene for a while, has had some family tragedy and got a one-shot lead over our guy, Alex Noren, and just a disgusting golf swing. So would really love to see Camilo get it over the line. And then my second thing, this is like, I don't know why the hell I've been thinking about this, but I have. Walker, what would you call, or DC, when you see a white undershirt, you know, that's like a cutoff tight white undershirt? You know,
I would call that a tough scene. That's what I would call that.
Well, there's that. But like, you know the term for it, yeah?
It's a white beard.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. We live in this politically correct world. How on earth is that still a thing? You know, I'm not sharing any platitudes here, but you can't say anything anymore, but we can still say wife beater. That's all I got. That's my dirt. That's my thinking. On we go. DC, you're on the tee.
Yeah, we had a pretty good week of drinking and eating kind of bleed together for me. So, you know, if I kind of a big coffee guy in the morning, you know, hydrate all day, drink a bunch of water, and then, you know, usually have a meal based around wine. So with the weather kind of cooling off, kind of getting into the more red wine focus, just kind of drink seasonally a little bit. So, you know, Burgundy, Italian, you know, the food, I was fortunate enough to go to two restaurant openings here in Charleston. The first was Lowland, which my friend, Jason Stanhope, who used to be the executive chef at Fig, did a soft opening, and we went to that on Thursday, and that was fantastic, and drank some good wine there. And then on last night, we went to a new Italian restaurant soft opening called Costa, which was also great, and had some Barolo and some pastas and a fantastic rolled chicken that was cooked sous vide, stuffed with herbs, and then I think it was like a 3-day process, and then they really got the skin nice and crispy. So it was kind of a surprise. You know, usually sea chicken, it's not one that I really want to go to, but they brought it out and I was pretty stunned by it. Reading, I've been reading, I just got the new edition of Noble Rot, which is a food wine-centered magazine. Yep. Out of guys out of London. And they have a fantastic wine bar, and the food is killer as well. But I was actually reading that last night. And then my 5-year-old is really, you know, the biggest holiday guy in the world, and particularly Christmas is coming up. So we were reading A Christmas Carol, which immediately puts him to sleep. But I've never read it, by Charles Dickens. So I'm getting into the Scrooge scene and reading that with him. And that kind of bleeds as well into the thinking. You know, Thanksgiving is like 10 days away now, right? So we do a big potluck out in Hollywood, not in Los Angeles, but the Hollywood variety in near Edisto in South Carolina. So it's on the marsh, and everyone brings their favorite dish. And so, you know, we kind of get it. It's called the Gator Hut, and it's a screened in kind of porch right on the water, and bring wine, do an oyster roast to start. Everyone got a couple birds, got about 60 people. And yeah, there's usually plenty of good food and drink, and yeah, it's a good low country scene, and knock on wood, the weather will be complicit with our Thanksgiving plans. So that's what I got.
Yeah, that's a fantastic call of Hollywood
length,
there.
Content, that's for a first effort, stellar dirt.
Thank you, sir.
He's a Mudball Monday vet. Love the Hollywood call there. The right Hollywood. That's a that's an iconic part of the South Carolina coast. Love Edisto. And I'll reach
I'm
out.
Short in Hollywood, by the way, for what it's worth. Hollywood, California. Love California. Love Southern California. Hollywood. I can leave it rather than take it or leave it.
For sure. Drinking. It's been a lot of the same, but Henry, I get the sentiment with the R&D. I'm like continuing to kind of tinker with my ratios of, so I have the South American dark, and I have the Mudball Half Calf, of course. And I've been just changing up my coffee order every single day, where like I have a little bit of cream on me. I normally don't use cream at all. Been using that a little bit. Some mornings I just go like 85% half calf. Some mornings I'm way more heavy on the dark, but have been really enjoying that. Have not been changing up quantity or anything there. Drinking a ton of water, just like I said this a couple weeks ago on Mudball Monday, but just like trying to continue to sweat as much as I did in August through the fall, and have certainly been accomplishing that. It's weather's made it pretty easy on me here. It's been like pretty hot, honestly. Yesterday was well up into the mid to high 80s, and just like sunny as can be. Does not feel like fall. So drinking a ton of water, using some limes as well, doing some of that lime water beginning and end of the day. It's been really good. Eating, Henry put me on the perfect bar when we were in Austin together. I will toss out a free ad to the perfect bar. Still figuring out where I stand on sunflower
free at the
oil. Say that again?
free, free at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. But this is very important. Accompanied by an apple, it cannot stand on its own. I find it tough to have one on its own. Once you pair it with an apple, very difficult to go back. And I told Henry this offline this week. DC, I don't know if you've gotten into the envy apples or the apple varietals at all, but the envy apple is incredibly dense. It's kind of, I would say, quality wise up there with a Honeycrisp, but twice as dense, like a very, very crunchy apple. It's one that kind of like a really good strip steak or something, where the taste is incredible and worth the time, but you kind of have to work for it a little bit. Whereas with the Honeycrisp is kind of like the dream apple, you know, where everything is a little bit too perfect. And you want something
easy now. We've been over this. We know Honeycrisp is not the real king here, correct?
No, it's not, but it seems too perfect, right? It's like too easy to eat. And then you go have an envy or something and you're like, this is more of a real experience. I actually feel like I'm not eating something that wasn't created in a lab, right? It's a great apple, highly recommend. And with the perfect bar, it is about as good as it gets, at least for me right now. I had some lamb this week. I had some pork this week. I am just hopelessly addicted to this adobo rub that I have right now. And I also have this, I'll shout it out next week, but this pork rub that's been taking dinners a very long way. We talked about bean dip last week. It was DOC week, and I did go in and make my bean dip this week. It was like this, don't have the brand, but kind of a Mexican refried bean style, just everything ready to go in one package. And then accompanied that with some pintos and some pickled red onion, and some leafy greens. It was very, very solid. And then just been having a lot of veggies this week for whatever reason. On to reading. I haven't read a whole lot physically. I've been on the road a ton this week, so I've been continuing along, finished up Leviticus, on to Numbers on my audio Bible, which is probably the toughest listening segment of all time, because like Leviticus, Numbers, the majority of the Old Testament is just like hardcore law. And I was talking to my brother. He's doing this program up in Raleigh called the Fellows Program, and they're doing a lot of, like, you know, hardcore investigation of the Bible, kind of talking through some of those things. And we just had this 40-minute, like, long Testament or Old Testament talk this week, which was just like, he was like, man, I appreciate you getting through those chapters, because they're just so they're tough in the beginning. So that's where we're at with reading.
And the name Numbers has to be giving you the yips as well. I mean, no one's ever exactly tabbed you as a numbers guy.
No, absolutely not. No, I'm just praying to get the Psalms. I was looking at, I had just a night to look at Twitter last night, and I was reading through, going deep on Michael Kim's profile. I don't know if either of you guys follow or read Michael Kim's tweets often, but I was thinking about a lot of these influencers and, like, you know, where do actually people provide value? And Michael Kim's a guy, I've DM'd him probably 15 times trying to get him on the pod, never get anything back. And he's just somebody who provides real value on Twitter. Like, week over week, he's providing takes that are not typically aligned with mainstream. They're more boring usually, but they end up being correct over time. A lot of his stuff on Live has been really great. And I was looking at it because of TGL. Like, I'm really wondering what's going on with TGL and kind of how they're going to unveil this thing to the public. And his takes have just been very centered and inclined to think they're more right. So excited to see what happens with TGL, and been obsessed with Michael's tweets. Anyways, that was long-winded dirt. Let's get straight to the pod. DC, excited. I want to talk about, kind of, you're a little bit later to golf, and want to talk about kind of how you curate the kind of golf that you like to play. Talk to me about what you've been like really honed in on the last couple years, and kind of as far as architecture goes, kind of where you're at in your process with just figuring out what kind of golf you like to play.
I started really kind of getting into golf in 2017, and then but in I joined I started playing down here at Yeamans in 2020, and that really kind of opened my in terms of architecture. And I met Brian Schneider, who of Renaissance Golf, and we've kind of kept in touch, and he travels a ton, but he's always open to text and has really been a great source in terms of exploring and learning about golf. And so I've over, 20 was a tough travel year, obviously, with COVID. But yeah, I've managed to, yeah, we're, I think we just talked off pod about going down to Florida and getting a course in. So whenever we're going somewhere, we're playing. So, and I'm looking to see as much as I can. And recently in April, it was my wife's, she had a big birthday, and we had some friends who had rented a castle in Scotland, and so she was like, why don't we go to Scotland and meet up with them and drink some wine, eat some good food, and go to London and do all that. And I was like, well, we're going to Scotland, what's going to happen. So she was like, you get 5 rounds. And I was like, okay. So I got to see the Old and Muirfield and North Berwick. And yeah, just had a great time. And yeah, so I've just been over the years, I've met a couple guys through golf that have kind of set me up with some of the places you should see, and the some of the bucket list type places I've been very fortunate to see. Like National is still my favorite golf course that I've seen. So I'll keep exploring till I find something that I like better. But yeah, that's been kind of just touring and seeing, if we're going someplace, I'm going to try to find a course that looks interesting, and it may not be the high rated ones. We went to Cape Cod last summer, and I saw a little 9-hole called Highlands, which was so much fun. It was, one of the, took the boys and we went for a walk, and some of the, just the most linksy course I've seen in the US. And that and kind of, just kind of keep my, expanding my horizons in terms of what kind of golf is out there. And obviously there's a ton more to see. I've only been seeing it for a couple of years here, but yeah, I've got a good start.
Love it.
DC, I want to ask you about National. With that being like, this is a consummate question that we like to ask people is like, what was that like first experience for you where you were kind of like, holy shit, like this stuff is pretty cool. What was it about National, be it the golf course, the company, the whole experience of playing out on Long Island that gave you that moment of, wow, like this stuff can be pretty darn good?
Yeah, for National, for me, it was, I played next door at Shinnecock as well, so that was a spoiled weekend. But and I also played Maidstone that weekend. So National for me was like playing in a perfect park. Like, if it just felt wild and natural, but also you could see where those template holes were, but they weren't pruned and manicured, and it wasn't a championship style course like, next door. It was, ringing the bell and walking up the Alps and seeing, and I've only seen it once, so I need to go back and play it. But everything was wild and just fun. I mean, I just felt like every shot was just a lot of fun. And that walk up 18, I hit probably my best shot of the day to get there in two. And that was just, and just a special place, having a cocktail on the porch after, just a laid back vibe. It was, yeah, it just, I think that just having it seem like it was born to be there, born to be a golf course, as opposed to something that was manufactured.
One more follow-up there. That's fantastic. So at the time you were newer to the game, what relatively was your handicap when you were playing National Shinnecock?
Probably around 11.
Okay. So
11,
we
12.
talk about this a lot of like who is a golf course for, and Shinnecock is one of those classic examples of, I always think of it as, man, I like absolutely love Shinnecock. It might be my favorite golf course, but I look at it through the lens of someone who's not as good and say, like, what on earth would this be like to play? So flipping that question to you, and there are people that are much, much worse than an 11 that are going to go out there. But what was that experience like comparing and contrasting a Shinnecock versus National, being someone who, you know, isn't a low single digit handicapper, let's say?
Yeah, I think that I actually played better at Shinnecock. So I was ball striking was really good. I had a tough hole on 10. But other than that, I was really getting the ball around, didn't lose a single golf ball, was kind of keeping it, you know, between the mustard and mayo, as they say. But so I actually had identical scores, I think, of 87 at both courses. So it wasn't that the difficulty of the course, it was just that, you know, it just seemed more, more manufactured, more, less of a wild, walk. And, you know, I mean, I'm a sucker for a blind shot. Particularly if you don't know, if you first time seeing something, you don't know what the hell is coming up, you know, like a Tobacco Road, that first tee shot where you're just coming, you're like, what, you know, is that ball dead? And then you find out that it's perfect. That kind of stuff is fun. And for me, it's not, you know, I'm not a good golfer. So it's, for me, a lot of it is about the walk and the thrill of a shot and, you know, getting, you know, having something that's wild and pulling something off that you didn't think you did.
DC, we're
not
talking
a good golfer
about,
yet. It's coming.
We're talking about solo rounds. I'm curious, like what the ratio is of, rounds you're getting out just like by yourself versus out with buddies or even like buddies trips or whatever. What's kind of your, how often are you able to get out solo?
So, you know, I play a lot during the summer, at Yeoman. So I will walk, you know, nine and do the loop. There's like 12 will bring you back, to the clubhouse, or you can do 13, then I'll play nine and just tee it up in the middle of the fairway and play that as a little par four. And I'll do that probably 3 or 4 days a week, just after work and just getting some steps and getting a walk. And I love it. So, I mean, I would say that is, you know, probably the most golf that I play. And I mean, up to maybe 60%, 70% of my rounds are solo, just because I'm going out and just walking a few after work. And sometimes somebody will join me. But a lot of times it's just, you know, throwing my bag on my shoulder and taking a walk and catching a few holes.
It's the best. Do you feel like you're trying to make your game better? Do you feel like you're just kind of enjoying the walk and the silence of nature? Like what is recharging you at that point?
Yeah. So, you know, it's a way to reset. You know, some people can have a cocktail at the end of the day. Some people can, you know, go for a run, go lift weights, whatever. For me, it's that, you know, you have a little division between that work life. And so when I get home, I'm kind of recharged to see the kids after, you know, maybe I had a tough day, maybe just, you know, just kind of grinding and needed a little, you know, fresh air. So for me, that's kind of the mode. I mean, yeah. Do I want to hit some good shots and, you know, shoot a good score? Sure. But often I'll play two balls or just, you know, hit it around and, you know, whatever, and walk 12 holes in an hour and 15 minutes. It's not like I'm trying to, you know, it's usually completely empty. So I'm just, you know, moving by myself. And sometimes, you know, music is frowned upon, but I'll have a little tunes on a very, very low volume sometimes. Just kind of, just getting a walk in yeah, my wife is fortunately pretty supportive of this newfound addiction.
Love it. What's
DC, where do you sit on the in or the on course liquid intake game? Do you stick to water on course? Do you like to have a couple? What's your play there?
Yeah, I'm not much of a on course drinker. I mean, I'll have, you know, sometimes I'll get a beer at the turn if I'm with some pals, but I'm never after work. I'm having water, and I'm, you know, maybe I'll grab a Gatorade or something. But it, you know, I would say, you know, 9 out of 10 times plus, I'm saving the cocktail for after the round.
Yeah, that's refreshing to hear, because I'm on the same wavelength, and I feel like sometimes I get some funky looks when you hit that 12th hole turn house and guys are grabbing another drink, and I'm kind of like, I'll have Gatorade, I'll have water, and people are like, okay, sure, great, but I'm like, yo, hold on, like I love a post round, but yeah, on course, I think water and Gatorade definitely more where I sit as well.
Yeah,
DC.
I have plenty of wine in the house, so we have, there's enough for later. So when I get off the course, there's no, I'm not an abstainer by any means, but yeah, I like the separation between getting golf and enjoying that walk, and it's not like it's a big workout schlepping a bag 12, 13 holes, whatever. But I'm moving pretty good, so I wouldn't want to
It's
like.
activity, no doubt.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to have like an IPA in my hand and slugging that down in a 90-degree Charleston day.
Doesn't sound
Unfortunately, it's
fun.
been done before, but
At Yeaman's
cure.
Hall, I believe. I feel like I've got a couple
Yeah.
pictures on my camera roll of you
It
sitting there with a little 8%er walking down the 17th.
is what it is. I'm curious about dinner, like, and this could perhaps lead to some wine talk, but you've had some great dinners over wine. Those, as you said, in your dirt, those two things kind of go together. Do you find yourself kind of crafting the whole day's meals around dinner time? Is dinner like the
100%. It is
okay.
the, yeah. I mean, lunch is a placeholder for dinner. It is, I don't eat anything for breakfast. I'll have
Okay.
coffee, water. Lunch, I'll have, a little sandwich, maybe a burrito bowl, maybe some, like a little, like something, around one.
Pause, pause. Burrito bowl. Where is this coming from? Don't do
Yeah.
it to
So,
me, DC.
sometimes I will have a little Chipotle. And but
Bless.
there are some good talk, so I'll get there's like some good Mexican joints that are not too far, and I'll get the local joints a lot too, so tacos, and get a burrito or whatever. But yeah,
Bowls are still elite. Chipotle is not in a good spot right now, but bowls are still elite. It's the way to go for lunch. But
but like,
love that.
even if it's not great, it's not really my expectation for lunch. It's sort of like, okay, it's fine, it's serviceable, and let's start thinking about dinner.
It's function. Okay, so how do you start building out around dinner? Is it like protein is going to be the central element? What are we serving alongside of it? Where does the wine come in?
Yeah, so the wine would follow the protein, and the protein would follow just kind of what I'm in the mood to get, or what would be, like it's 50 degrees and raining, something would be heartier, sounds better than maybe a ceviche or whatever,
Well, Frogmore chowder, perhaps. That's always a good Charleston play.
that is a good, I'm not going to go with that, but that's a great Charleston play. And my wife is from up north, so she won't do the shrimp and grits, but I would always be game for that for a
I
Charleston.
might be doing that tonight. Yeah, that's
Nice.
never a bad call.
Yeah. But yeah, maybe, pork chops, or steak, or roasting a chicken. That it just depends. I'll, make pasta at least once a week.
Okay, DC. So we have this conversation a lot, that, well, two conversations. One, you talk about two golf courses and say, what's your 10 round split between these two? If you had to split 10 rounds, how many would you allocate to each course? Walker and I do a lot of talking about steak versus pork chops, and I think the Mudball Monday hardos know where I sit on this one. But you mentioned both. I'm curious your 10 meal split between a steak and the pig.
I'd probably go 6-4 steak. But it's not, I mean, it's not that far off. I mean, a really good, you can get the pork chops have come a long way than those thin kind of crappy ones you'd see at the supermarket a few years ago. Now you're getting Gorbota pork chops, or something with some good marbling, and you can, and the kids like them too, so that and they don't love steak as much, so that works out for family, getting a few thick pork chops. And don't be afraid with a little pink in your pork chops.
Not at all.
They don't need to be, well done. Let's get some, get some juice in there. And the pork chops are great. But yeah, I mean, I still, would be, I have a bunch of hanger steaks that I got from a company called Flannery in California, and they make great tacos. We'll do, hanger steak tacos. Get the all of their beef, I think, is dried. So get some, strips and rib eyes, and we don't do it every day, but they're if I had to pick one, it'd be steak.
How often do you guys do the kind of the larger format beef? It could be beef or any sort of protein, but kind of the long drawn out stews that are used in like tacos or just like slower cooked dishes versus the, hey, I'm gonna like cook this piece of meat for, tonight's sitting and just have it be for tonight. How much are you guys doing that stuff?
Yeah, I think that's probably more seasonally where you're getting, I make a short rib bolognese where I'll cook it for, low and slow, take it all off the bone, strain it, and then make the bolognese with that meat and, make homemade tagliatelle or some sort of pasta. And that's, one of my favorite things to make. But we'll do, a braise or something like that. Obviously, we're getting into the braising season. And that obviously is more of a weekend. Where you got the, you're not throwing something together when you get home. So,
Yeah. Henry, do you ever
absolute
do that?
shocker here. Walker, go ahead.
Going for like a leg of lamb or something for the week?
I think it'll probably be happening reasonably soon. I don't have a crock pot, but I mean, as all of us know here, I mean, we got a Charleston guy, Tampa, and Austin. Like, you're not really reaching for some big roast when it's 100 degrees out in the summer. That's not really something that excites me. But looking out the window right now, seeing it raining in 50 some degrees, like I could see a roast making its way in. I mean, it's a great Sunday option and have that for 4 or 5 days throughout the week. So the answer is up to this point, virtually never, but have done it plenty of times in my life, and it probably will slide in pretty soon. DC, I wanted to follow one up there. I mean, shocker here that this podcast has turned into just a food chat. Who could have seen that coming? But I'm curious, in your eyes, what's the interaction between, because it sounds like you really like to cook. Obviously, the restaurant scene in Charleston is great. How would you describe the interaction between those two for you? Like, when you go out to eat, is it more of like, this is just purely the event, I'm super excited to see what this chef is doing, et cetera, or is there a little bit more of like, hey, I'm really excited to have this food and then see how I can bring some of this into my own kitchen? Like, how do you think about that interaction between being a chef, but then also really enjoying going and seeing what other chefs are into?
I'm just thinking about where the best food is. So that's kind of where, yeah, I mean, if I can steal something for my own kitchen, fantastic. But yeah, for me, it's, where in town am I excited to go eat? And, we're fortunate where we get a date night every Saturday night. So we'll go out to eat on Saturdays and usually find somewhere where maybe we haven't gone in a while, or maybe that's new. And like last night was new, and Thursday night was new. So, yeah.
DC,
One more
we're
follow-up there. Walker, can I
Henry,
do
go
it while we're
ahead.
on that topic?
Yeah,
Sorry, I feel like
go
I'm
ahead.
kind of bodying you a little bit today. I apologize, but I'm just getting excited talking to a good Charlestonian here, especially about the food scene. DC, what are your kind of two to three or four mainstays in Charleston? Like, places that have been around for, let's say, more than a handful of years that are just always going to be stellar. And then you mentioned Lowland, which I'm already like looking up here. It looks like they've got a couple different things, the Lowland Tavern, and then a more proper dining room that'll be opening in December. But so what are a couple newer places you've been to in the last 6 months or so that are pretty exciting down in the low country?
Yeah, so if your first was like standbys that have been there for a while,
Yeah.
Fig's been there since '99, I think. So, tough to have a bad meal there. And Chez Nu's now been there for I think 6 or 7 years. And if you haven't been there, that place, they handwrite the menu every day, and they're it can be menu dependent, but almost everything's good. We like to go to The Ordinary, which is also like a seafood based restaurant in town. And Hall's First Steak, getting it back to the steak action, it's hard to go wrong with a Hall's steak. Newer stuff, Chubby Fish is always solid. And then I think Vern's has just kind of jumped in and put some of the best food out in town. So that, if you haven't been there, that one.
I cannot get a reservation at Vern's. Like I'm in Charleston four-ish times a year, and I will look, 4 weeks in advance for Saturday night, you know, a month away. And it's like, oh yeah, sure, you can sit down at 9:45. I'm like, God bless. It is.
They leave,
I don't doubt that it's great.
They leave tables open for walk-ins. So just go walk in and see, you know, see what they can do. There's a little bar you can eat at. So yeah, just pop in. And it, like we went, I had a buddy in town for a member guest, and we did a little restaurant hopping, and that we went to Chubby Fish and Vern's that night. And Vern's was like, we need the table back. Yeah, we can get you in right now, but we need the table back in 45 minutes. And we're like, great. So we just sat down, ordered, and we're out the door in 45 minutes. But that was, yeah. So, you know, that some of those places allow for walk-ins. And certainly they want their locals to be able to come and eat, not having to make a reservation 30 minutes in advance. And Fig is the same way. They have a communal table right at the front door where you can just walk in and put your name in and go sit at the communal table if you don't, haven't made a reservation 30 days in advance.
It so looks incredible. DC, we're nearing the end of the year. Curious kind of what you have on the hit list for trips or just experiences or things that you want to learn more about, go see, go do in the golf world next year.
So next year, I got to get to Philadelphia. I had a Philly trip and planned 2 years ago. And, you know, had it all laid out. And then a hurricane came from Louisiana. I can't remember the name of the storm. Probably blocked it based on the sadness of this whole memory. But it basically parked over Philadelphia for 4 days and got a complete deluge and we got rained out. But, yeah, I need to go see, you know, we had some of the big ones there planned. And I'd like to get up to Brian Reed Schneider did Hollywood. So I want to go see that. I want to go. See Cricket Club and, you know, Marion, Pine Valley, all those in the Philly scene. That's definitely going to be on my 2024 bucket list.
Any restaurants to accompany those in Philadelphia?
Yeah, so I've never been to Vetri, which is supposed to be, you know, I have a good buddy who makes some fantastic wine, Ricardo La Ragnai in Montalcino. And I took him to a restaurant and I will not, now it's no longer with us, but I liked it a lot. And he was like, this is the worst Italian I've ever had in my life or whatever, you know, cause he's like, he's Italian, but he said Vetri is the spot for Italian in the United States. Need to go check that out. And,
love it.
Yeah, there's good, you know, obviously get some sandwiches and there's some good pizza, I think for sure. Also haven't been, never been to New Haven, kind of tried to float that as a little trip this fall to the wife. She shot that down, but wanted to go see that, go eat some pizza up there and go see, pop over to Fisher's. So
I'm excited for the ale restoration. We're getting close and we've got to tie those two things together because I think that restoration is going to be among all the great work that Gil and their team are doing right now. Like, what is happening at Yale, what's going to happen at Yale, plus the fact that I've never been to New Haven before, that's going to be a pretty special trip when it happens. So, well, good. Philadelphia, anything else on the golf front?
Yeah, so my wife works out in San Francisco, so I would like, I've only played one round of golf ever in California, so that was down in LA, I believe. Henry, you were down at BA, and I played BA and out in LA. But yeah, I need to go back and see something in the north. Would love to go, you know, see Cal Club, see, you know, Cypress. You know, obviously if I can get that to work, San Francisco Golf Club. Yeah, there's a bunch of great Olympic. Yeah, a bunch of places up there that I have an excuse to go tag along for a trip, just haven't done it yet, and I need to do that.
Yeah, no hot take, but obviously just so much great golf in California. And the wild thing about California is, like, if you sat there and said to yourself, okay, like, I'm going to try to strike out each of the really, really good courses in California, like, it's an absolute endeavor. You know, you could do basically San Francisco in one trip. You could do, if the stars align, Monterey in more or less one trip. But then, you know, there are kind of some ones that you need to fill in. And then LA probably takes a trip or two or three. I feel like I played Bel Air and Valley Club yesterday, which was absolutely immaculate, as was Bel Air. But it, you know, I'm 26 now and lived out there for 6 years, and I finally have more or less completed kind of all of the great California courses. And living and playing out there for a while, I'm fortunate to have had plenty of spins around a lot of those. But it's a lot of great golf, and it's obviously a big state, and so you know you have to get out there a good handful of times to really get it all done. But you know, fortunately, when we talk about the things that we've talked about today and that we're all interested in, when it comes to travel and putting some good restaurants in there as well and some good scenery, California is not too tough a place to get out to every now and then.
Yeah, we stayed in Santa Monica and ate some fantastic food. And LACC was planning for, they had just, I think, closed when we were there for in prep for the open. So didn't get to see that one, but need to go back to LA. And yeah, the food scene was fantastic.
DC, Henry and I, let's say, it's a little bit tricky between red and white, and whatever else, but I need some wine help. Both kind of, I would say 2 out of 10s as far as knowledge and interest goes. But yeah, at some point,
2 out of 10.
Yeah, at some point, you gotta up the ante a little bit. I'm curious if there are any sort of cheat codes that come with like bringing a bottle to dinner, meet somebody's mother, you know, just kind of bring a bottle over to the right place. If I can, what do you need? Like if I send you a text, hey DC, looking to pick up a bottle, I designate red or white, how are you going to get me to the right place?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is you need to go and obviously get out of your liquor store, get out of Total Wine. That's not where you want to be. You don't want to be, it's like, you don't want to be at the grocery store. Find somewhere locally. And fortunately, in Charleston, we have a couple of fantastic spots, Monarch and Graft and, you know, the Wine & Co. I mean, there's somewhere in your town, you know, wherever you are, there's got to be somewhere that curates wine that doesn't get the, you know, something with a kangaroo on it or a, you know, a leopard or whatever it is. You know, find something that where the winemaker cares about the process and is making real wine that doesn't have a bunch of chemicals and garbage in it. And then, you know, and make friends with that person, whoever's buying that wine. So that would be my rule of thumb. And until you find out what you really are into, and then you can kind of, you know, maybe shop more nationally and whatever. But yeah, I mean, that to me, you know, start local and find somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Something you said that interests me there, you know, people talk about going over to Europe and they drink wine and they don't like get this hangover. They don't have a headache. And people say it's because it's just cleaner, more natural wine. It doesn't have these bad chemicals in it. So is what you're saying that in the States, you can get the same sort of stuff. You just have to know where to get it and what you're looking for and not get just the manufactured junk. Or is it to some degree all going to be on that continuum and not quite of the quality that you're going to see maybe in Europe?
No, I think you can find, I mean, with the market has become increasingly global. So when I, you know, I've been drinking, buying wine, collecting wine since 2005. So, you know, it's been, that back then you could, you know, you're basically, you know, local, that's it. You know, basically whatever could be imported. And now it's like, you can basically get it, whatever you want, and find a way to get it, you know, depending on the quantities made. But no, you can absolutely find something that has zero sulfites, you know, zero chemicals, zero, you know, basically low intervention in terms of what is being used to farm. And that's easy now. I mean, there's so many natural wines that are available. It's almost becoming, if you go to a little wine shop, there's almost as much natural, so-called natural wine or zero zero is what some of them call it. We use zero additives, zero sulfites. And that is becoming almost as prevalent as your just generic kind of regular wine that's not, you know, organic or whatever. So, you absolutely can find that. Whether I don't know if I buy the science in terms of, you know, whether or not that's creating the hangover or not. People say champagne gives me the hangover. Well, It might not be the champagne, it might be the 10 glasses of champagne, you know. So that
I was about to say, I generally notice, like, if I have two beers, you know, I feel pretty great the next day. And when I have like eight of them, I feel pretty not great the next day. So there's probably something to that as well.
absolutely. Yeah. So but yeah, for buying wine, finding something that, you know, that you really like is the most important thing. I mean, I've gravitated to Burgundy, and over the years, just, and it's been a tougher scene, you know, buying it, finding it, you know, just because of the demand for it has been kind of crazy. But that's just what I gravitate to. But you know, if you like a big Napa cab, go find a Napa cab that you like. If you like a, you know, Mencia from Spain, go find that Mencia that you love. I mean, you know, for me, it's not about what, you know, what somebody's telling you to drink. It's about what's interesting in your glass and what you think that you're excited about sharing with somebody else.
Yeah, it's
Where I
cool.
know I sit, and I think Walker's probably in a somewhat similar spot, as you know, we talked early. We're coffee snobs, we're not wine snobs, but we talked about doing our R&D. Like, when you ask me, okay, well, what do you like when it comes to wine? I'm like, I have no idea. And so there is some R&D that needs to be done here, which, you know, it's not the toughest duty ever. So I think we each need to, you know, start actually figuring out what we like, and then we can probably expand on this conversation a little bit more and get more granular on some of your takes.
It's like you need your proxy wine. You need, you're like, hey, I like these four wines in red and I like these four in white. And if you can find somebody who knows one of those four, you're like, hey, help me add another one to this list. And then it kind of keeps growing from there.
Yeah, it's like finding out, you know, you guys are coffee guys. So, you know, you now know the difference between espresso, what espresso tastes like, or your half calf calf, right? Those are two different varietals of coffee. So, you know, finding out what grapes, you know, could be Pinot Grigio, could be Chardonnay, could be, you know, whatever it is, get a bunch of them open on the table and have, you know, have people over and don't drink four bottles yourself and feel terrible the next day, but share them and have some stuff open. Now there's like ways you can, there's a device called Coravin, I think you guys heard of that, where it inserts argon into the bottle. So you know, it basically, it's a microscopic needle that pierces through the cork and extracts the wine, and then replaces the wine that's been extracted with argon. So it actually, and the cork, the hole's so small that it just seals upon itself. So you can actually, you know, you don't have to open a bottle, and if you don't have a bottle, you can just pour a glass and see, you know, if you like that glass. So we did that when my wife was pregnant and I drank it. I would just pour in a glass at night, and you know, instead of having a bottle sit around for a day.
Interesting. Wow. If you have the bottle, you have the bottle, I guess. Like if you end up not liking the wine, you could sell off, you know, like 3/4 of the bottle online or something.
I think that would be tough. I think once it's been
Yeah.
accessed, you're stuck with the bottle. But if it's
There you
terrible,
go.
you know, you were talking about, if it's a red wine, you get it in your beef bourguignon, you know, you braise some beef with it.
Are you generally pretty accepting with wines? Like, if it's part of the process, right? Kind of like with golf, you're going to have a lot of bad shots. You're going to drink a whole lot of wine that you don't necessarily love. Do you find it that way, where like you're pretty accepting if a glass isn't what you thought or what you wanted it to be?
Accepting in the way that, like, you know, if I'm buying it or if I'm served it or like if
More so,
I
I
met
would say
somebody
more so
now.
drinking at home, like buying bottles. Like if you choose to play the game, you kind of have to accept that you're going to buy things that don't fire you up. It's a part of the excitement of getting that one bottle where you're like, this bottle changed, you know, this bottle was the pinnacle, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are, you know, fortunately, you will have wine flaws, you know, that happen, a cork taint, you know, Brettanomyces, something that'll affect the quality of the wine, that will make it undrinkable. With those, you know, those just go down the drain, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, those are rare. But yeah, finding something that I'm not super excited about. I mean, you know, I think I've been pretty fortunate where it's like, you know, some stuff I'm like, I mean, that's not a rebuy for me, but like, you know, I've not had, you know, when if I'm buying something, I've usually vetted it to where it's like, I think it's going to be good, and then if it's not like a value proposition, I just won't rebuy it. But if
Yeah,
I'm
that
at
makes
like
sense.
somebody's house and they're serving, you know, like a Sutter Home or something, and they're like, "You're a wine guy, you know, here we have wine," and I'm like, "I'll have a beer." It sounds Sounds pretty good. You know, it's a, I the wine needs to be, it doesn't have to be expensive, but it has to be something that's like, you know, not terrible, you know.
Yeah, no, I totally get you. We're coming up on time here, so DC, thank you for joining us today. This was a blast, and we'll do it again.